Welcome to Eye to Eye, the podcast of the Royal College of Ophthalmologists. My name is Sunil Mamtora, and I will be your host.
Today, I'm speaking with Mr. Venki Sundaram, a consultant ophthalmologist who works at the Luton and Dunstable University Hospital NHS Foundation Trust. Thank you so much for joining me today to talk about how to write a book, and more specifically, your experience of writing a textbook that's very well known amongst trainees. Now, before we go into more detail about that, I was just wondering, could you tell the listeners a bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, sure, Sunil. Well, first, thank you very much for the kind invitation to be on your podcast. I know we've talked recently about other topics, but I appreciate all the work that you've done and all the hard efforts that you put into sort of getting this podcast out on a regular basis. So, yeah, it's my pleasure to be here speaking this evening. Yeah, as you say, I'm a consultant ophthalmologist. I've been a consultant now almost 7 years at the Luton Dunstable Hospital and did my training mainly in London, so South Thames trainee most of the time, and spent some time doing research as an MD at Moorfields and the Institute of Ophthalmology, did a fellowship in medical retina at Moorfields, and then, started life up in Luton in 2014, you know, living in St. Albans, have family and things. And that's essentially me in a nutshell.
Okay. So your book, Training Ophthalmology, now in its second iteration, is that right?
That's right. It's in the second edition at the moment. That came out, I lose track of dates, but around 2015, 16. We're actually currently just working on the third edition at the moment, so that I hope will be publish later on this year, perhaps the late autumn time, hopefully.
Exciting. So how did the process and idea come about?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going back a little while now. So I'm talking around sort of 2006 time. So I'm quite old compared to perhaps most of your listeners. So my initial training started in the old training system where we had house officer jobs and SHO jobs and registrar. So I was essentially about 2 or 3 years in as an SHO. So I guess the equivalent of ST2, ST3. And I remember I just literally finished my, you know, back then we had the MROC op exams, which you sort of did before going on to registrar training. So I just sort of finished that part three of that. So, and then around that time, say 2006, a friend of mine called Matthew Gardiner, who moved from medical school. Now, he was a general surgical trainee, and he was preparing for his MRCS surgical exams. And you know, for some reason, he didn't really quite find the textbooks and resources available at that time were quite well suited to the sort of exam. So he wanted to create a book for the MRCS surgical exams, just based on his experience and his, ideas. So he came up with the concept of that in terms of structure, layout, and he approached Oxford University Press, OUP. So he told us he did most of the groundwork. So he came up with this concept, which Oxford University Press, they liked a lot, and they were wanting, and they wanted to make it into a series. So, you know, I knew Matt quite well. So he approached me just asking whether, you know, there was potential and if I was interested in, you know, creating a new textbook for ophthalmology. So at that time, the sort of training system was about to go through a huge change. So sort of going from the old style to the new ST curriculum, you know, this run-through training. And with that, there was a whole new training syllabus from the college. The exam format was sort of changing as well. So I saw an opportunity to produce a textbook which sort of geared towards that. And of course, clearly there are, you know, there were lots of other textbooks on the market, but there was nothing, you know, there was nothing specifically geared towards sort of training in this country and the sort of nuances that our training system has. So I saw a clear opportunity there. Yeah, I mean, absolutely grateful that the sort of concept was already in some ways established, and there was interest and, you know, backing from a sort of large publisher such as Oxford University Press. So that's this sort of mechanics in terms of how it happened. And in sort of then comes on to sort of why I did it, because I sort of knew, you know, right at the start that it was going to be a major project over a sort of year or two. That was quite clear. So in terms of then sort of personal reasons why I wanted to do it, well, you know, to be honest, first and foremost, it's just a really amazing opportunity to, you know, write a book. I mean, I never thought that I would have the opportunity as a trainee, as a medical student, as a doctor. So, you know, and these things don't necessarily come around too often. And, you know, I mean, like most of us, we sort of love ophthalmology. We really enjoy, you know, reading about it, going to conferences and just learning about ophthalmology. So, you know, and I always place a lot of value on the importance of, you know, sort of being taught well. You know, and a great textbook is really an amazing thing. So, you know, I was very passionate about doing it. And, you know, and also, you know, to be honest, looking at it from a different perspective, you know, there's obviously advantages and sort of benefits if for your own CV and sort of going forwards in your career. And yeah, so that's really the sort of how and why it came about.
That's really, really interesting. And I just think back to my own memories of preparing for exams. You know, the one book that springs to my mind is The MCQs in Basic Sciences by John Ferris. And, you know, when you're revising book and you find that book so incredibly useful, then the person who's written that book becomes almost like a celebrity to you because you've studied that book so hard and you've read each word in such detail.
Yeah.
So that's really, really interesting.
No, absolutely. You know, that book, I mean, I obviously read that and most people did. You know, it's John Ferris's book, you know, was a classic book. And yeah, I mean, these people, especially when you start off in training, and, you know, I'm sure there's still a case with John Ferris. I mean, he's a huge name, huge personality in ophthalmology, I guess. So, yeah, I mean, it's... it's interesting, but then being on the other side, I'm sure, you know, I don't know John, but I'm sure he doesn't feel, and same for me, you know, I just don't feel any, I mean, you know, I'm pleased that I've done it and I'm proud that I've done it, but I certainly don't feel any sort of star status about it, that's for sure.
It's funny, isn't it? Because to us, when we read these books and we know these people as ophthalmologists, it's a really big deal. But if you were to talk to the average Joe on the street, they wouldn't have a clue what you're talking about. Yeah. You know, out of interest, have you ever had anybody come up to you in clinic or in hospital saying, oh my God, are you that guy who wrote that book?
I won't quite say they said, oh my God. I mean, in fact, what's interesting is I have had a few trainees who started with me and then for some reason or people, they didn't realise that I did it. And then they didn't click, or for example, they have the book and bought the book, but they perhaps didn't. You know, because I wouldn't say that I'm a particularly well-known ophthalmologist in this country, so perhaps they just didn't click that it was my name on the book. So I've had that a few times. I mean, it is nice that I have had people, you know, come up to me or whatever saying, oh yeah, you know, I have your book, I really like it, it's been really helpful. Actually, the best comment I like to hear or really makes a difference is that, oh, it's been sort of really helpful for my exams. So that's a nice one, because I know how difficult exams can be and things, so anything that helps that process, you know, a bit easier. Yeah, for me, that's nice.
It's particularly impressive that you managed to coordinate and write this book as a relatively junior trainee. You know, you were ST3 at the time, right?
Yeah, effectively, it was. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So the book finished, most of the writing was around the ST3 time, I'd say. It actually came out when I was then an ST4. And, you know, it's funny you should say that, because at the time, when you're doing something like this, you know, you just do it. You don't know anything different. And so you just sort of, you know, go through the process and you sort of do your best and do what you can. But essentially, working on this late edition now, and perhaps we'll come on to it later on, it's great that we've got sort of different authors working on it and a different editor as well. And, you know, and these guys or girls, you know, they're around the ST3, ST4 level now. And I'm just sort of so impressed with their level of knowledge and commitment and, you know, sort of discipline that they've got and enthusiasm. And I think, you know, was I like that back then? And, you know, I never really felt that way. But you know, so perhaps in some ways I was to a point. But yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, I think a lot of people feel this at the time. And even, I guess, in our jobs, and you probably feel the same, you know, you're doing sort of high quality work, but, you know, you don't really know it at the time. So maybe, you know, when you retire or you, sit down on a long holiday, you can perhaps think about that, you know, reflect on it. But at the time, you're just, you know, so involved and so engrossed with it, you're just, you know, sort of so wanting to, you know, do it well. You know, you're probably scared of mistakes at that point, you know, because, you know, people will be reading it and they'll be perhaps sort of seeing, treating patients or doing their exams based on what's in the book. So, yeah, there's clearly a responsibility. So it was more, that was the probably focus and rather than...
So your book is really a comprehensive summary of ophthalmology, and you've got sections covering, I think, all the subspecialties. So how did you go about recruiting subsectional authors? There's quite a lot of people and moving parts involved.
Yeah, certainly are. So again, this came with the initial format, which was, you know, created by you know, my colleague and all the books. So with OUP, they have this specialty training series, and they all, well, certainly in the first edition and second edition, they kept a very similar format. So it was a relevant chapter. So ophthalmology is obviously straightforward: cornea, retina, glaucoma, etc. And the idea was to have a junior author, which was a trainee, and then a senior author, which was a consultant involved. So that was a set template, and that's, you know, sort of kept across all the editions. Now, you know, you could have the same author writing more than one chapter. That happens, or the same, you know, senior author. So how that came about was, it essentially started. So the first process was to recruit editors. So that was the first bit. So for the first book, it started with me, a colleague who I trained with and who I actually work with as a consultant now, Alan Barsam, who I knew. And I knew that he would be a person that, you know, I could work with, who would work hard. So got him on board, and he was great. And then, you know, so he was able to find trainees that he was working with that who he thought and I thought would be good. So it's about finding, first you find the editors of the book, and then you use your sort of judgment and contacts to find authors who would be sort of willing and able to write that particular chapter in the way that it needs to be done, and sort of a certain time frame as well. So that's, and that is a process. So I guess one of the key skills with this sort of thing, because in some ways my role and the editor's role is about sort of managing the project as well. It's sort of management of people over a 12-18 month period. So, and it's better if you can to find the right person at the start, because not everybody, you know, can deliver when they say that they will do. Sometimes personal things happen. So there's lots of reasons why things don't happen in time. And as we got on and coming to the third edition, you know, you have a more of a feel of what's going to work and what's not going to work. So, yeah, it's a case of, you know, contacts, people who you identify. I think that's one of this skills I think that I do quite well, in the sense that, you know, I fully appreciate that I don't have all the talents and all the skills required. But if I see somebody who has, I've got no qualms about sort of identifying them and, you know, asking them, and if they can do something better than I can do it, then absolutely, you know, go ahead and be my guest.
Sounds like that's given you the opportunity to develop some good people management skills that have seen you well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're into the third edition now, and presumably this takes a significant amount of work. So how much time have you kind of actually spent on this project from the beginning, and how do you balance that with your, you know, your personal family and other work commitments?
Yeah, so I'd say the first edition, as you can probably imagine, took the most amount of work, you know, for myself and everybody else, really. So, you know, I was thinking about this earlier on this week, and to be honest, it took about 18 months from when we... So I said the whole process took about 2 years, which includes the proposal aspect, which we can talk about later on in terms of how the book, you know, got off the ground in that sense. So, and then in terms of actually writing from the first page to it, to submitting the final draft, I'd say it was about 18 months, okay? And in that time, I mean, I did, you know, at my desk, you know, in our flat at the time, I must have put in about, you know, sort of certainly over 1,000 hours of work, maybe sort of 1,200-1,400 hours of work. Okay, so for that period of time, I would say about four or five nights a week, I was at my desk, maybe sort of two and a bit hours, on the weekend, maybe about 4 or 5 hours, you know, one of the days, if not both days on the weekend. So, you know, it was a consistent amount of lots of work in some ways, but, you know, I didn't have any qualms about it. I enjoyed doing it. It was really sort of thing that I got engrossed in and did it. So, yeah, I mean, that was the most amount of work. And I think as lead editor, you take the ultimate responsibility for things. So, you know, lots of queries come your way and things, and you have to respond to certain things. And also, to be honest, some chapters people unfortunately weren't, you know, able to deliver on time. And because there are time scales involved, then I had to step in and, you know, to help sort of write chapters, which I wasn't originally planning on doing that. So first edition was a huge amount. The next edition was still a fair amount, but not quite as much. So I think I started the second edition when I was sort of ST6, ST7 level, and then it got published maybe my first year as a consultant. You know, not as much work, but yeah, so a fair amount. I think what was amazing with the second book was, again, we had a slight change in editors, and you know, one of the editors that came on board with Lucy Barker Gelling, who's now a consultant at Moorfields in pediatrics. And, you know, again, I met her initially at the College Congress quite a few years before she got involved with the book. And I just recognized somebody who's very, you know, hardworking, reliable, you know, so good to work with. And she was really helpful in that second edition. And then sort of on to the third edition. It's got less. I tell you, this edition, what's nice about this one is that we, for the first time, we've had a more junior sort of editor, in the sense that, you know, obviously the first edition we were all quite junior, but with this one, Jonathan Than, if I can say his name out, he's an ST4 in London at the time, and, you know, he's just somebody who just finished the exams, and, you know, just the sort of person that you want on board, really sort of hardworking, intelligent, you know, just very good. And he's done a lot of work on sort of getting the book up to the sort of right level where it should be again, where, because there'd be lots of changes in exams and what sort of some knowledge is required, really. And you know as you go more away from sort of being a trainee and as a consultant, you sort of lose a bit of touch with sort of what's going on the ground. So to be honest, he's been great. He's stepped forward. I've been, you know, sort of able to delegate a lot more of the things that I did in the first edition to him. And that's really because I wanted somebody else who could sort of, you know, do something that you know, that I couldn't do sort of in this edition. So, you know, it's an ongoing amount of work. So we started writing this current edition in around September. We have most of the first drafts through now. Now we're going through as editors, just looking at that, making changes. You know, we'd hope to submit the final drafts by sort of May-ish, and then it goes to the publication team at OUP, who will, again, they have a great team of sort of typesetters and proofreaders and that sort of stuff. So there's a whole good support system, you know, behind the people who sort of help write the book.
So what has actually changed for the third edition, and, you know, what would you say to somebody who already owns the second edition to persuade them to buy the third edition?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a lot, actually. I mean, it's just been sort of updated. Well, obviously, we'd updated it to the current context. For example, if you take the medical retina chapter, you know, which I was so closely involved with, there's a lot of trials that have, you know, has come out in the last few years, and a lot of those are sort of asked, I understand, in the exam. So there's a lot of emphasis on sort of putting those trials into a sort of table format, so it's quite easy for trainees to look through and to have a summary of each chapter. And so that's one sort of major change with that. And also, I think trainees would find that it's just, well, it's as close to what is being asked in exams as you can possibly get, because, as I say, Jonathan Than has literally just passed his exam this year. He's knows, you know, what's being asked in what detail, and he's gone through, you know, with a fine tooth comb, literally every page, every topic. And, you know, and that's what I wanted him to do. I wanted to say, you know, is this what's being asked in his exams? Is there anything more that sort of, you know, trainees need? Because last thing I want is them to have a book and there's lots of gaps missing in it. So I'd say it's, you know, it reflects the training curriculum and, you know, what's been asked in this current state of training as can be.
So you really hope that with regards to the content required for the exam, that you've tried to make a book that really has as much as possible as you need?
Yeah, as much as possible, but I'm also conscious of making the point that, you know, I don't think any one book can cover everything. I think that's, you know, you'd appreciate that because, you know, and also with the book, there's a certain limitation on these page count and, you know, this number of things that you can add on, the number of images that you can add on. So because as part of the proposal with OUP or I guess with any publisher, what they are looking for in the book is, you know, clearly for each page it adds, or for every color image that you have or your table, costs money in terms of, you know, paper, ink and things. So they have to have a sort of break-even point, I guess. So, you know, the book's around 500-ish pages. It's not as if I can sort of, or we can jump that up to say 700 pages for the next edition, then to 900 pages. That's not going to happen. So we have to just work within the constraints of that.
I think there's one question that I'm sure many listeners are thinking about, and, you know, feel free to decline to answer this question. But, you know, you've spent, what you've said, you know, first edition, 1,200 hours writing this book. How lucrative is it to write a textbook?
Yeah. It depends how you define lucrative. So in, say, financial point of view, it's not very lucrative, I'd say. You know, for each book that's sold, and I mean, bearing in mind, we might sell maybe 1,000, maybe sort of 2,000, you know, copies in each edition. You know, you might get a couple of pounds for each one, which is, you know, to be honest, this sort of thing you sort of don't do for the money. Clearly, it's not like, you know, sort of Harry Potter sort of books where we'll sell millions and we'll make the author an absolute fortune. You know, you do this sort of, you know, and I think most authors and editors, you know, in the field of medicine know that it's not going to be a sort of lucrative thing unless it's an incredibly sort of big selling book, you know, for over many, many years. But in terms of, you know, other ways where it's lucrative, I mean, very much so in terms of ongoing learning is huge. Like, I feel that I'm keeping up to date as much as I possibly can do, you know, some ways contributing, you know, to the field of ophthalmology, you know, say satisfaction and a certain amount of pride in being able to do that. I mean, you know, to sort of take on something like this and be able to do it, you know, gives a certain amount of confidence, I'd say. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, for people thinking about doing it, I mean, it's not about the money. It's about doing things that you enjoy, that you're interested in, how you feel you might be able to contribute. Because, you know, we're all sort of part of this great specialty of ophthalmology, you know, that sort of states, you know, that sort of saying we're standing on the shoulders of giants, and we're trying to take the specialty forward in our own small way, really. So it's more that, I'd say.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And, you know, a couple of pounds per book is probably less than what I've imagined. So thanks for sharing that.
Well, yeah, no, it's fine. It's partly because, you know, because we've got more. You say if I was sole editor on the book, if it was just me, then, you know, you get more. But we sort of split it more ways because, yeah, you know, you can't do this by yourself. And the more people you have on board within reason. But that's fine. Yeah.
So Venky, the final question that I really wanted to ask you was, you know, for a trainee or anybody else who's considering writing their own book, what advice would you have for them?
Yeah, good question. I mean, what I would suggest is, well, a few things. You can look at, I mean, Killy, if you're going to write a book, I mean, you got to ask the question, what's that new book going to add? So is there a gap in the market which you can see, okay, there's certainly something missing there which is not being covered. So, you know, if that's obviously there, then that makes sense. You know, is it new knowledge, or maybe is it current knowledge which you think can be presented in a better way? So, yeah, basically asking, you know, what's this new book going to add, and are people, you know, they have to have a reason for buying it. You can't just do the same thing in the same way, okay? So, yeah, and then And then you got to look at, you know, sort of what's your motivation for doing it, because, you know, it, as you say, as we talked about, it is a lot of hours, it's a lot of effort, it's a lot of, you know, time, you know, perhaps away from family and etc. and sort of holidays and things for that period of time. So, you know, is it because you're just very much interested in doing it? You know, is it for your career progression and CV? You know, it doesn't really matter what it is, you know, because that's a very individual thing to answer. But as long as your own, you know, it's the reason for doing it, you know, your own why is strong enough to carry you through, you know, that 12-18 month period, then that's fine, okay? Because, yeah, you know, you don't wake up every day thinking, okay, I'm going to spend 3 hours doing this. So it needs to be something strong there, okay? And I think the other good important thing as well, you got to be honest about, you know, sort of, do you have enough time or energy at this point in at that point in your life? Like, you know, if this opportunity came my way now for the first time, like, you know, can I write this textbook? You know, I would absolutely say no, because, you know, we're married, we have children, and I just, to be frankly honest about it, I wouldn't want to spend that time away from family at this point in my career. Okay, so that's important. And yeah, energy, I mean, as you get a bit older, you know, I'm not sure we have as much energy as when we're younger as well. So if you're going to do it, perhaps do it sort of, you know, earlier on. And I think the other good thing is, a really important thing, it was work with good people. So work with people who you can get on well with, you know, who are going to deliver, because ultimately, you know, if you're not on the same boat, if, you know, certain people aren't pulling their weight, then it will soon get frustrating and it's just not going to work. Okay, so I'd say they're the, probably the sort of main things. And yeah, I mean, just also, you know, if you have an idea, or if you should go to a publisher, that they're going to want quite a detailed proposal. So you need to do your research about, you know, the book, and, you know, so where it fits in the market, what is the gap in the market. You need to be very clear about, you know, what's the actual aim of the book and the contents. And so just get it as much sort of clarity of how you feel, how you see the book being in its sort of final version, because that sort of guides all the decisions you make. So in some ways, just starting with the end product and then you're working backwards. That's the easier way to do it, rather than just, you know, trying to make it up as you go along. I mean, that's going to just take, you know, too much time. There'll be too much chopping and changing backwards and forwards with that, which is not really what you want.
Yeah. Well, Venky, thank you so much for sharing all that advice with us. It's been a really fascinating interview, and I really look forward to the third edition.
Thank you, Sunil. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, you know, it's just been interesting doing this as a podcast. It makes you think about your, you know, sort of training and things you've done. And, it has been a very sort of enjoyable process. And thanks again for the invitation, and hope people find it helpful.
As always, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to get involved, talk about your work, or have any feedback, send us a message at communications@rcops.ac.uk.